Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Open lines 248-539-9797. Great to be with you here on a Monday. We got Champ and Chump. Get your votes in for Champ and Chump on the weekend. Who should be singled out for having the best weekend? Who should be called out for having a weekend that stinks? We tally up the votes and post on our website on Tuesday who the people select as Champ and Chump on the weekend. Heavy voting coming in for a couple of local stories. Scoobal on the positive side. And the Beasley stuff is, it's a tough topic because it's just an investigation and innocent until proven guilty, but it's a bad look and it's right before free agency. And it's like, I really hope it's not true, but in the end, I guess if it is, I'm glad we found out before any contracts were signed, although they might, who knows if you could get it voided out, but man, that would be a really, really bad decision. And of course, internet sleuths are finding Beasley highlights from all over the place and saying, see, this is it. This, he's cooked. Look at this, which is not fair. Of course.
I think you could probably mention that for any player
that
and go
be a
back
bad
and
moment.
Find some bad moment that they've had. Like, oh, what a, he Olayed this guy and he just drove right past him. Or, hey, here's a meaningless basket or here's a terrible jump shot at this opportunity. I mean, everyone has those moments. It's really hard to, I mean, unless it's blatantly obvious and it's like you said before, it's about the paper trail more than it is. The video stuff, the highlight stuff will only corroborate the paper trail. This is where it gets started. This whole thing got started because of some big bets placed on props.
Yep.
On what was an over-under total for rebounds or something like that.
Yep.
And there were abnormally large bets. Well, let's keep an eye on this. And then you go in and watch the video. And the video doesn't necessarily corroborate what the large bets were because it went the opposite way of it. But, yeah, you get the red flags that go up when big bets come down on games.
Let's get back to your open line calls. We go to Steve and Shelby on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
We're good.
I wanted to tell Gator about a little story about a roller coaster incident.
Oh boy.
During the blackout way back in the day, I think it was like 02, 03 or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that blackout.
My uncle got stuck on the climb on Millennium Force, and they were stuck there for a few hours until they were able to get everybody off, and they had to walk down like the stairs. That was terrifying for me, and I was just watching him. I wasn't even on it. Because
wow.
I like to keep my feet on the ground. And I worked up the courage to go on the dragster a few years later. First time I'm on there, doesn't go all the way over, stays on the top and goes backwards. I damn near had a heart attack.
Oh my God. So you went all the way back down?
Backwards, yeah.
Oh God.
And then they were like, oh, we'll send you out again. And I'm like, dude, you better get me off of this thing. Like, I'm not going on this thing.
You're going like, to do what? Hell no.
Yeah, no. I was done with Cedar Point after that.
So we, you know, it's funny because I wasn't going to bring this up, but we got stuck on a ride once, but it was SeaWorld in San Diego, and it was like one of their boat rides where eventually you go up and come down a hill, but we were still in the cruising part where you're like cruising around at ground level, which was relatively not terrifying.
It's pretty tame.
Except for one thing. My wife and daughter.
Killer whale?
No, the wife and daughter were behind us, and where they got stuck was where there was water that fell on the entire boat. They got stuck underneath.
They kept dumping on them?
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Why am I laughing?
Now, my daughter, to this day, like I thought she was damaged for life, but she likes roller coasters, but in that particular
but
moment,
hates water rides.
She might actually hate water rides. I have to ask her about that.
See, the water ride, that was one I actually wanted to go on at Cedar Point. Like, let's do Whitewater Landing, the whole, yeah, mm-hmm. Game on. I don't know if it's because of water and I love water. It didn't bother me as much, mm-hmm. But the roller coaster is just out there in the air and you see the whole, you get up to the top and like, oh, look, here's the greater Lake Erie area. I can see everything. And I, oh, look, I can see over to Detroit. Don't need to be that high up. And here we go. Drop.
I just looked it up. The ride was Journey to Atlantis, where we got stuck.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's go to John in a van. You're next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're all good.
Right. Okay.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, hold on. Yeah. I'm just calling in about Simon's curse there and how it got stuck. So I actually am group where one of the guys who was stuck chimed in. They did, some ride manufacturers did come back up to the top and slowly tilt it back down. And they allowed some people who, if you wanted to get off, they escorted you back down. But, from what the gentleman said, there was a lot of people that stayed on. They considered it, quite more of a rush. I just wanted to chime in and add that, the safety mechanisms on that ride were actually doing what they were designed to do. It would have been a whole lot better for it to be stuck like that instead of it disengaged, you know, half tilt.
Well, I suppose that's good news. I will tell you that the idea that people stayed on it after that just
certainly,
people are wired differently. Let's just say that.
But, I mean, hanging like that for, you know, 10 minutes is a little extreme. I guess they weren't uncomfortable.
You guess they weren't what?
His legs were a little bit. He said that his legs were a little bit uncomfortable, but other than that, he said that for the most part, it really wasn't that bad.
Well, I guess we would have a different definition of what one considers not that bad.
Yeah, listen, you know, getting bit in the leg by a shark, you might think it might be really painful, but it's really not that bad because once a leg's gone, you know, hey.
Interesting comparison you went with there.
Well, shark week coming up, so.
Dan in Dearborn, you're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Dan.
Hi, guys. You know, I was thinking, Malik Beasley probably knew about this investigation early on, probably before he even got here. And that's why he kept pushing for a contract. Like, oh, I love it here. I love it here. Sign me. Because he knew this was going to come out eventually.
Or he loves that's it here and he wants theory. To be here.
No, I mean, look, Dan, it's possible. I think it's.
I mean, that's what he says. But, you know, you never give away your free agency that quick. You usually try to get as much money as possible. But I think he knew he wasn't in for a lot of money. That's why he just tried to get that contract signed.
Yeah, he probably wish this news didn't come out. Regardless of whether it's true or not, he probably wish this news didn't come out. And I would suspect would have signed a contract rather quickly. Again, Gator, you've pointed it out how incredibly difficult it is to talk about this because he does not deserve. He absolutely deserves presumed innocence. And, you know, an investigation. There's a reason there's an investigation. It's probably not a great reason for Malik. But until this thing plays itself out, and the one guy that was devastated last hour, and I get it, if you really are a huge Malik Beasley fan, at least the Pistons can go with plan B. Now, when did they find out? When did Beasley find out? When did the agent find out? When did the rest of the league find out? Because it, you know, it makes you do wonder. Chaz Lanier, known as a shooter, was he drafted because they knew they'd be without Malik Beasley? Does their free agent plan involve the not Beasley? And I think it's, you know, easy to say now, but if they've been preparing for life without him, did they think they were going to re-sign him? All questions that we don't know the answers to yet. 248-539-9797. We'll get to more of your phone calls and feedback. Champ and Chump votes, get him in. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk about the Rocket Classic, another great event in Detroit. What's the future hold for this event? That coming up later this hour. Dan Dickerson on the call. Scooble dominant again last night. Lots of votes for Champ of the Weekend. And the Tigers, again, I'm going to say this out loud, and it's going to be a fact. The Tigers have an 11.5 game lead in the division and are 21 games over 500.
Both are our season highs.
How about that?
I think 21 games. I think they were 21 one other time above.
Yeah.
But the 11.5, I think that's a high.
Pretty incredible.
That is incredible. After a month of the season, I think there were four teams in the division that were above 500.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's one.
Mm-hmm.
And last we saw Cleveland, Tigers lost 3 out of 4. They won the fourth game in that series. And it really, it feels like that was the start of this team playing now back to like 500 baseball. And every time I look at the last 10 games, it seems like they're 5-5 in the last 10 games.
Yeah.
But maybe now they can get back to adding to that total. Washington's with the Tigers go to Washington. The Nationals have a losing record. And then it's 3 games at Cleveland starting over the weekend. I think the series against the Gribe over the weekend, think Tiger fans are going to pay close attention to. Yeah. I know that on the morning show was interesting. You know, Jim Costa had already said, Tigers, they've won the division. I'm not afraid to say it, and that's what he said. And another was an interesting question. At what point, if you're reluctant to say that, aside from superstitions, at what point will you be comfortable with proclaiming that this team's going to win the division?
I mean, look, it's they're in an incredibly healthy position right now. And we're all trying to fix them all the time. Got to get this, got to get that. And, you know, one of the reasons why I have a sense of urgency is because other teams are going to make moves. Somebody's going to make a huge move. And if you stand pat, you don't want to let anybody pass you by. They've got valuable assets that other teams want. I can't believe this is a year later. I can't. Whatever we were doing a year ago today, it wasn't this.
No,
it was nowhere close to this.
I will tell you what. I'm pretty sure what we were talking about a year ago today, we were probably talking about starting to talk about trading Skubal and all the Baltimore prospects. That's probably where we were at. You know, with a month going into the trade deadline, certainly with a couple weeks, that's really where it ramped up, and it felt like that was the entire show for 2 weeks leading up to the trade deadline. It was all about Skubal and Baltimore. Can they get this prospect? Can they get that prospect? And it's crazy to think a year later, none of Baltimore's prospects that they were looking at seem to have panned out.
No.
Baltimore has been a terrible disaster this year. And the Tigers have simply kept playing at a pace that everyone said was impossible to continue.
Yeah.
You couldn't possibly keep at that pace once the second half of the season got going and the Tigers played, you know, 600 baseball the rest of the way, or better than 600 baseball, and now they've continued that pace. It's like 120 games or 130 games now where this is the real deal. This is who they are. It's just it's a better version of it now because they have more starting pitching now than what they did last year. Last year, it was about the bullpen. The bullpen was so damn good. Well, taking some hits with a bullpen, and yet in the next few days, we could see Reese Olson coming back to the rotation on Wednesday, perhaps. We could see Alex Lang come back to the bullpen, maybe as early as tomorrow. The results of him pitching at Toledo look pretty good. Like he's, yep, ready to go, which would, I mean, you're talking about adding. No, those aren't small pieces because it's a massive upgrade in your bullpen that you can then release the bottom part of your bullpen and add that. That's big upgrade. And Reese Olson coming in would help calm some fears down with the rotation.
All right. Do you want to know what we were talking about? This isn't exactly a year ago, but I found a show sheet.
Okay.
Here are the topics. Yzerman.
Yeah.
Across the board, most fans still have faith, but I would characterize it as wavering.
Yeah.
That was 1 year ago. How about this conclusion I drew? I feel like people are starting to feel worse about this Tiger team than they're feeling about the Detroit Pistons right now. 1 year later, we feel great about both.
Interesting.
And 1 year ago today, close to a year ago today, Jobby Nooner turns 50. The Rocket Mortgage Classic or Jobby Nooner? Go to one. There you go. That was close to a year ago, what we were talking about.
That's interesting. I'm going to go and see if I can find something from a year ago.
Anyway, let's get back to your phone calls. We go to Chris and Ipsy on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Hey. Just calling to touch on something that a previous caller talked about in regards to Malik Beasley and his potential awareness of the federal investigation.
Yeah.
Look, I'm an attorney, and I'll just say this. There is absolutely zero chance that he knew that he was under investigation by the federal government. Federal government does not tell people when that they're the targets of a criminal investigation, and there's a pretty good reason for that is that people tend to flee the country when they find out that they're under the eye of the federal government. So even if he did know, a new contract from the Pistons wouldn't solve that problem. All of these contracts, whether they're player contracts, coaches contracts, all of them have morality clauses and conduct clauses, where if they get charged with the crime, especially a federal crime, it voids all kinds of things. There's clawback provisions, blah, 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 blah. So he didn't know that he was under investigation. I promise you that. Mm-hmm. And even if he did, it would not matter for the purposes of his contract. It would not save him. Malik Beasley wanted to stay here because he really likes it in Detroit. And, he, you know, he's got connections to the city. It's a cool city. And, you know, it was probably pretty sincere. It's really messed up what's happening to him right now.
It is really messed up. And let's just hope that this investigation, nothing comes out of it. And Malik Beasley is fine and goes on to, I mean, I don't have any ill will towards Malik Beasley. I'll be really upset if this is true. You know, the allegations stem back to his time with the Milwaukee Bucks. So, you know, if it was a one and done for him, I mean, it won't matter in the eyes of the league. In the eyes of the league, it sounds like you're done and you're out of the league if that's the case. But, I mean, it just sucks. And he is certainly right here afforded the innocent till proven guilty. But it's a huge story brewing that involves a guy on our team that, according to Sham Sharania, was on the brink of a three-year, $42 million contract, I believe was the total. 248-539-9797.
So I found a show sheet from June 17th of a year ago.
Okay, so.
There's an interesting Detroit Lions tidbit there.
All right.
The Lions will sign Jake Bates. It feels like a sigh of relief will be exhaled throughout Metro Detroit. This saves a lot of future bitching and sniping from the fan base. Unless he doesn't make the team.
That's funny. That was like a year and 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything more stunning than where this, how healthy this Tiger team is. 11.5 game lead. 11.5. In the division, which there was so much respect for going into the year. Now, maybe the rest of these teams, they aren't holding up their end of the bargain, but part of it is, they're getting beat up by the Tigers, you know?
Tigers are good.
Tigers are really, really
good. Tigers are good, you know? And we haven't brought this up yet today, but Kerry Carpenter hits the home run, then hits a triple. Mm-hmm. And as he's gets to third base, feels some tightness in the hamstring, which he's dealt with already this year. And
it's become a lingering thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. And yet it's nothing that, like, I'm not panicked about it. You know, if this were some other year, I might be panicked about an injury to one of your better offensive players. And yet right now, it's like, hey, we just got Vierling back. I mean, he's not Kerry Carpenter, but he's very competent. This team, you know, it just means, what does that mean? More time for Wenzel Perez? Okay. You know,
right.
They've got an opportunity here. If they wanted to rest Kerry Carpenter and give him, and this or me, if you know, depending on how with the severity, if it's nothing, it's like, oh yeah, he's fine, he can play tomorrow. That's the one thing. But if it's something where we want to give him a few days off, I would say this: give him a few weeks off. Wait till after the All-Star game to bring him back, because you can absorb it right now. You have an 11.5 game lead in the division, which is most important. You've got that opportunity, and two, you've got plenty of options of players that you can put in the lineup in his place. The obvious one would be Perez. And then if you want to work in your Matt Vierlings and Jamai Jones, then you can go ahead and do that. In the meantime, you can bring somebody else up, whether you want to add to the bullpen or if you want to add to the lineup. You've got flexibility. But depending on how bad this hamstring is, and it doesn't sound like it's bad, but if it's bad enough where he needs to take a few days off, give him a few weeks off.
Let's go to Nick in Shelby Township here next. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're great. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I want to talk about the Tigers, but my main focus on the Tigers making a deep run, if you look at it, to me, is Jack Flaherty. He really had a good run of baseball, I think, for like six games. He was pitching great. His ERA went under 4. And now his last, I think, 3 starts, maybe 4, is where he has really struggled. And to me, we lost Jackson Jobe. To me, he is an important factor for this team moving forward. If this team, like I said, if they're going to make a deep run, Jack Flaherty's got to get back to what he was doing in that 6-game period to where he was pitching great baseball.
Better last time out. Wasn't crazy about the location last time out, but the results were better because he hadn't gotten out of the 5th inning and was shelled in the one game and was pulled very early. And this past outing, I'm trying to find the six innings, five hits, three earned runs. I mean, it's not the best version of Jack Flaherty. And like I said,
a bunch of walks.
Location wasn't great. Yes, four walks is suboptimal. But I don't disagree with you. Flaherty is just a massive part of what this team is going to be moving forward. Is, you know, can he, get the job done? Because when he's on, look out, right? When he's on,
correct.
They are in really good shape. Really good shape. So I hear you. I absolutely hear you. 248-539-9797. Here's the thing. If he's doing it enough, like he's not, you got one Tarek Skubal, and then he was number two. And it felt like when he's on, that's a 1-2 punch that can carry you deep. He's been sketchy lately. And it's probably why people are shopping for starting pitching. That and the Jobe injury. I guess Reese Olson doesn't help either, and he may start Wednesday. We'll see. And yet there's still 21 games over.
Right.
And there's still 21 games over.
And they're still waiting for Alex Cobb.
Yeah.
You know, you got this Dietrich Enns pitched out of his mind last week. Is that a fluke or is this a thing? You know, Sawyer Gibson Long is in this rotation as well. I mean, they do have questions for sure.
It's Carson Anderson, 97-1, the ticket. He's good.
One hit, one walk, 13 strikeouts. Seven innings, didn't even get to 100 pitches.
Love the stage, too. You could tell he loved the stage.
Yes.
Sunday Night Baseball.
It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Packed Comerica Park. Everything on display there for the ESPN and ESPN and ESPN2. And they had the players mic'd up at different times. They talked to both managers. And the Carlos Correa stuff was great at shortstop talking with Javi Baez while the game's going on. You got to see Tarek Skubal's reaction when Byron Buxton went deep but didn't go out of the park. It was caught, and Buxton's kind of got a smile on his face and Skubal's laughing, and they're both, you know, having a good time about it. And you'd see a different side of baseball when they do the Sunday Night Baseball. And it's great. And the fact that the Tigers showed up, it was their stars on display. Here's likely the all-star starter or considering to be the all-star starter in Tarek Skubal. Here's Riley Green going deep for a home run. You know, Gleyber Torres is playing as well as he. The all-stars were there, and the phase one all-stars,
yes.
Hopefully phase two all-stars. Javi Baez, and got plenty of talk about how he's turned around. It's just, it was great to see. Great night for baseball, and a great result for the Tigers. Another win. A shutout win, another series win, 21 games above 500, 11 and a half games ahead in their own division. If you're reluctant to say this is a great baseball team, I don't know why.
Well, look, I mean, it's probably because the lack of star power. You know, when the Tigers were really, and Skubal's a star, Green is blossoming into a star, but the Tigers are really good. Back in the early 2000s, it was like, ooh, look, they brought in Pudge Rodriguez. They brought in Maglio Ordonez. And then they really started to load up. And Miguel Cabrera. And, like, you're getting star-quality players, household names you know of that have been established in the league. Right now, while there are stars that are coming of age, it feels like they're stars coming of age. It's not established stars the way it was back then. And so even now it's a little bit of how are they doing this? And I mean, they're way, way above 500, way out in front in the division. And they just keep winning series. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say about them other than this. It's just been awesome. Like, we got this Brady and Jackson just sending this champ and chump. Champ, the Detroit Tigers, plain and simple, they play good baseball. Yeah,
there it is.
Chump carries hamstring that surely has prevented him from hitting for the cycle. Maybe. but carries hamstring, you know, that's an annoying, especially when he's just coming around again, right?
Yes, exactly. He's picked up the home run pace. He was much maligned because he had gone through a long stretch where he wasn't hitting. His average is down the 250 range now. But the last couple games, it's starting to perk up a little bit. Although I saw a rather alarming stat that they show on the screen from last night. Do you see this one? At the time, so maybe it's another, maybe add another plate appearance, but he had gone 93 plate appearances without a walk.
Yeah, the walk thing's gotten weird.
They've got, it's crazy because it's like a, it is an organization-wide credo to command the strike zone, know what it is, and draw walks. And yet the Tigers have several players that just don't draw walks. Kerry Carpenter, Javi Baez, these guys don't draw walks.
He went 0 for June.
I mean, that's insane.
He got to a three ball. I was listening to the radio one of the last few games, and he got to a three ball count, and Dan Dickerson was like, oh.
But I mean, we can laugh at it because they're winning.
Yep.
But you'd like to see a little more selective at the plate and maybe drawing some walks.
So today does begin phase two. And, you know, we have a long history of dominating phase two here in Detroit. We don't know why they did this. We have no idea why they did this for the voting. But we have three finalists for phase two of All-Star voting. And we have until Wednesday at noon to vote our guys in. This is important to a lot of people. Go vote for Gleyber Torres at second base, Riley Green, and Javi Baez in the outfield. And the Tigers, when the All-Star game starts, could have four players on the field. Skubal, Baez, Green, Torres. Which is pretty remarkable, really, when you think about it. And I guess we sit here and talk about lack of star power. That's one way to feel it. I mean, Baez was a star at one point, right? And then came to Detroit, and but whether it was hurt or whatever, just wasn't. He just wasn't a star. And this year he's gone back to being a star type player. Yeah. And if Torres makes it, I mean, what an awesome signing that's turned out to be.
Yeah, it's not bad when you sign an all-star. It works out. And Skubal right now has competition for starting the All-Star game with the Yankees' Max Fried, who is also 10-2. Mm-hmm. And Fried actually has a lower ERA. He's 1.92 ERA. Skubal's is down to 2.15. Skubal has way more strikeouts, but you know, Yankees manager is going to make the decision on who starts. And it may not be Tarik Skubal, but he's going to have a couple more starts before that All-Star game. I mean, he's certainly deserving of it, but you can make the argument so with somebody else. But the Tiger players, though, I mean, Riley Green deserves to be an all-star, a starter. And, I mean, Javi Baez is the wild one because now he's back to playing shortstop. They sent Sweeney back down. And yet, if Javi Baez makes the all-star team as a starter, he will start in center field.
I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure there are no show sheets from a year ago where we talked about voting for Baez in phase two. Pretty sure of that.
Pretty sure we didn't have anything phase two.
Yeah. But it's just incredible. You know, the Gleyber Torres story, he was signed as an international free agent by the Chicago Cubs. And he was in the Cubs organization for 2 years. And then the Cubs did one of those trade deadline deals where they landed a big fish. And Torres was one of the handful of prospects that went the other direction. And it was with the Yankees to land Aroldis Chapman. Torres was traded for Aroldis Chapman, went to the Yankees, has been there since, and is a two-time All-Star with the Yankees. This would be his third All-Star appearance if he does win the Phase 2 portion of the voting. Again, get out there and vote. Get your Phase 2 shirts online. And he, I mean, like you said, you know what we never said? Tigers have signed an All-Star in Gleyber Torres.
Right.
We did not. Well, I'll only speak for myself, Scott. I did not praise this Tiger offseason enough, because the Tiger offseason between Torres and Kainley. I mean, last night was the Kainley vest thing again at the end of that game. And Kainley was he benefited from an incredible defensive play by Spencer Torkelson. The double play where he backhanded it, got the throw down to second, and returned and had a great stretch at first, which helped Kainley out of that inning. was pretty cool. And then Vest coming on and just sweating his way. And I don't mean it was high pressure. He just always looks like he's pouring sweat, absolutely right. Pouring sweat. And he sweated his way through a 1-2-3 ninth.
So Torres is competing with, I think, Jackson Holliday to see who gets the start at second base.
Yeah.
So now we get to this phase two voting, and you're just choosing between the two. It should not even be a choice. Gleyber Torres should win in a landslide. He's batting like 30 points higher than Jackson Holliday. Actually, it's 25 points higher. He's got 10 more RBI in the season, one fewer home run, but his OPS is 99 points higher. It's not a question. Gleyber Torres should start the All-Star game at second base for the American League.
248-539-9797. All right, let's get to the Rocket Classic. We haven't talked about it much today. And what does the future hold for this event in Detroit? That at 1248 here on 97.1 The Ticket. Yeah, that last pitch was on the black, too. You know, we were doing things in sports that are just underratedly beautiful. And one of the ones that got suggested, and that last pitch was one of them, is when a batter takes a called third strike and starts to walk away before the umpire even punches him up.
I know. Yep. All right. I got it. This guy.
Yeah.
Schoolboy was literally unhittable last night for 4-plus innings. And then when all was said and done, through 7 innings, had given up one freaking hit. Not to say there weren't a couple of hard hit balls. There were good positioning by the Tigers and some nice plays, but it was a great performance all around for the Tigers. You got to see everything on display, a little bit of power, the amazing pitching, the back end of the bullpen, the really guys who they've been relying on with Canely and Vest can get things done. It was good to see.
248-539-9797. All right. So Rocket Classic, 5 playoff holes. Aldrich Pottgeter beats Max Grazerman. Pottgeter, he's a huge hitter. He's 20 years old. You know, we talk about lack of star power. Maybe this is a place where stars are born. Maybe the name Pottgeter becomes a household name in the world of golf. So I love the theater and the drama. And of course, the two of them and Chris Kirk go to a playoff, and comes down to the two, Grazerman and Pottgeter. Grazerman had about 3 putts to win it at various times, 18 in regulation, and then in the extra holes, Pottgeter had a couple of putts, and finally somebody rolled in a long putt. None of these putts were really easy, but finally somebody rolled in a long putt to win it, which is, you know, I mean, kind of what you want to see is some drama and it unfold with an amazing shot. And I wonder what the TV ratings are going to be like, because you keep going, the drama builds, it gets to one of these, is this thing ever going to end? And they're citing that the longest playoff ever was 11 holes, ironically, in Detroit at the Motor City Classic.
Well, it wasn't like in Detroit, but yeah, it was the Motor City Classic that took place, I think, the place in Northville, Country Club, Meadowbrook Country Club.
Okay, well, there you go. And that eventually was just called a draw. They called it a tie. I mean, that whole thing, right, is...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you just think that this is great theater, regardless of who the names are, but you realize the names do matter.
They do, and yet Pottgeter has 3 top 10 finishes this year. So there's that, and he just gets his first career win. He's only 20. To have 3 top 10 finishes at the age of 20 mm-hmm. might portend that this guy's going to be a force to be reckoned with for a long time, and we got to see him up close and personal to win his first. And he's 20 years old.
Yep.
He's now 49th in the world golf ratings. He's 36th in the FedEx standings with the point totals. So good for him. I mean, it's just watching the young guys get out there, and the young guys hit the ball so damn far. I mean, you're talking 360, 370-yard drives. All these guys were able to do it. Just crazy. And this is just... it's the world we live in now with golfers that they swing out of their... they literally swing out of their shoes.
Well, yeah, Grazerman had to get a new shoe or a new spike in the shoe after 18. So, I guess the question is, what's next? What's next for this event that has one more year under contract? If you watched it all, you heard about how they're basically redoing the course.
Mm-hmm.
as soon as this is over. It's like probably going on right now, bringing the bulldozers.
Yes, I think they literally were going to start it up right away.
So, you know, that's under the assumption that, hey, we want to host this event. I mean, do you do that if you're not trying to continue to host? There's an option for 2 years. And it's moving its place on the calendar to later in the year when players might be scrambling for FedEx playoff points, yes, which could help in terms of attracting a field. You know, I don't know why it got moved, but it sounds like it has a chance to be have a better field as long as it gets extended as an event. Okay, here's the negative. On television, it didn't look packed.
I thought that was a little strange. Like, I was watching throughout the day and I didn't notice it until you got to the 18th hole and it was the playoff for the first playoff hole when they started at 18. And I'm watching and I'm thinking to myself, am I missing something here? Because there's hardly anybody there at the tee box watching these guys tee off. Well, maybe everybody's going to be waiting at the green, you know, and then you see some people in the gallery, they're hitting their approach shots. And then they have the aerial view on the drone getting towards the green. And the stands were mostly filled, but you can see some empty seats in the stands. And then, but it didn't look like there were more than, I don't know, 1,500 people?
It didn't look like there were a lot of people. And, you know, that's how it played on television. Maybe somebody who is there might tell us otherwise.
You know, you got three guys, and you're not expecting it to end on that when you have three guys competing in a playoff. To end on the first playoff hole. Maybe that's part of it. People are just jockeying for position on other holes, but I don't know. It was outside of that, it looked like it was great on TV. Like, they had great shots, great angles. The golf was obviously, they had plenty of great golf shots involved. You had drama, but I did find it a little strange. It looked like there weren't that many people that were there when it was all was said and done.
Now I'm going to wander into an area that I'm not an expert in here, okay? And I guess it's never stopped me before, so let me charge into that area.
Here we go.
Did see on social media some people complaining that tickets were a bit pricey. And, you know, when it comes to price points for events, nobody's in favor of higher prices. Everybody's in favor of lower prices. One of the pieces of feedback we got from a listener last week was they didn't love it because they couldn't see as much because it was so crowded, which implied that people were buying tickets and going. That was one person's perspective. Mm-hmm. They went on a Saturday or Sunday. When I went as a fan, I went on I think it was a Friday. I'm almost sure it was a Friday. And crowds weren't the issue. It wasn't too crowded. It also wasn't empty, but I would not have called it too crowded. If they raised the ticket prices because it had been crowded in the past, I don't know if they did or they didn't. I believe the general admission buying price was $85. Is that too steep? Is that a fair price? I mean, nobody's ever going to call up and say, yes, I'd pay more. Most everybody would say, yeah, make it as cheap as possible. Was it overpriced? I don't know.
But yeah,
on television, it came across as maybe not as well attended as I expected, which is disappointing if true.
Did you notice that throughout the course, or was that just noticeable? Because I wasn't noticing it until they got to the playoff.
I was, I'm watching the final group really dialed in, and I'm like, if I were there, I could be walking with these guys right up on the ropes, no problem. That's how it appeared on TV. Sometimes TV can be misleading, and I want to acknowledge that.
Yeah, and again, because of who the group was, like, were people watching Matsuyama and Morikawa because those are the names? Or was it just simply, you know, it wasn't well attended? I don't know. But people have great things. The golfers have great things to say about the course and the fans.
They have, yeah.
And Morikawa had great things to say about the fans. They're always charged up and ready to go, and it makes it great. And obviously, they hit low scores. But 22 under par is certainly not 30 under par or beyond that, like people thought it was going to be. The course was very receptive the first couple of days, and then it got tough the last 2 days. Yeah. It got real tough, and yet some people still shot really well, but most of the field struggled yesterday.
248-539-9797. Jason in Detroit, you're on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, Jason.
How you guys doing today?
What's up?
Yeah, so was there throughout the weekend, and
honestly, for me, just being there going each year, this is probably one of the better years, I would say, in terms of attendance. I think what you guys are seeing is, you know, when it comes to Sunday, that's where a lot of those hospitality spaces that you see, you know, on 15, 14, you know, 16, those are all bought up by corporate sponsors, you know, a lot of businesses that buy into there. By Sunday, you know, not a lot of people are going to go there. It's always Friday, Thursday, Sunday, or Saturday that, you know, you see a lot more of those places. But in terms of the GA admission, the price has always been the same. But year over year, seeing it each year, Sunday is always getting, you know, you see that lack of appearance in those club spaces, which get the most camera time. So that's where it looks like it is empty.
Why is that? Why is it that they look like that they're empty on Sunday?
Well, so think about it, because there's multiple, all those suites in those corporate spaces, all the hospitality, those are bought up from businesses. Not many people are going to want to be there on a Sunday, I believe. And from personal experience, a lot of people are like, I'd rather just watch on TV. But you don't miss that really with the actual GA crowd that's walking around following the guys. It may not look like that, but there's definitely plenty of crowd. But it really is just, I think, because they're using the tickets for, you know, clients, you know, potential prospects. It's a business ticket, not a fan ticket.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's fun that it's here. It was great theater. Does it have a future here? I hope. You know, the incoming PGA commissioner Rolop spoke very highly of it. The PGA has always said they want to have events inside city limits, and there's only two in major urban areas, Detroit and Atlanta. So hopefully they'll stay committed to that. And, you know, it may be the point on the calendar next year is going to bring bigger names and is searching for FedEx Cup points, which I imagine they'd see a course they can score on and think, yeah.
Right. And
of course, everybody can score on it. But.
Yes. But also being so close to the playoffs, you might have players that will take time off just to rest as opposed to keep competing. That's the downside of it. But I don't know. I kind of like the idea that it's later in the season because people do want to take advantage. Because when you get to the playoffs, isn't it? I mean, you get advantages for. For having more points, because the whole playoff format, isn't it like, hey, the leader starts like 10 strokes ahead of everybody else or whatever it is?
Yeah.
So you're going to want to accumulate as many points as possible.
Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket.